What's up, everyone? Tyler Dunnett, Go Long here. Thank you so much to everyone who made it out to Fatty Beer in Hamburg, New York. Man, that was fun. Saturday to see some familiar faces, some new faces. We had a hell of a time drinking beer, talking football. We are absolutely going to be doing more of these. So keep your eye out for future shindigs, Go Long, TD.com, and your email inbox. We'll all get together at another fatty very soon because that was too much fun. And in between the intermingling and the IPAs and the seasonals and everything fatty has to offer, we recorded a couple conversations here for the podcast. First up, Jeremy White, WGR55. We talk everything Buffalo Bills, everything wide receivers in this NFL draft. Kind of look back at that Stephon Diggs situation as well. And then the back half of this episode, a conversation with Jay Skursky at the Buffalo News. Same deal. There's so many angles to take looking at these Buffalo Bills into the most important draft for general manager Brandon Bean since he selected Josh Allen over Josh Rosen. So it's a big week for the Buffalo Bills. Hope you enjoy. And again, be on alert. We're going to do this again very, very soon. It was a ton of fun. Thanks, everyone. We're live here at our 2024 draft extravaganza. Jeremy White in the house, WGR. Jeremy, it is a pleasure. Like I told you, I hear your beautiful angelic voice in the morning and to see in person. I'm honored because you have kids as well. And like I told you, to cash in those Marriott points with Go Long for our event here personally means quite a bit. It's not easy. No. It's not easy to cut away and get a day. But how in the hell are you?
Good. I have two, and we have a third on the way. So, yeah, cashing in those points.
Have I talked to you since this news?
Maybe not. Maybe not. We have a third.
It's breaking news.
Yeah. July.
Congrats.
So, quick. So, cashing in those Marriott points is about cashing them in now also because as of July, like, shut it down.
I know everybody wants the Bills, draft takes, but, I mean, we got to know. Like, to go to that level, to go to three. Was that difficult for you? I mean, we're having that conversation now, and
yeah.
I'm quite sure where I fall down on that.
So that conversation is kind of funny for anybody. I mean, maybe you've experienced this too. But like, we talked about going to three, and then we found out, oh, you're in fact going to three. It was not planned. It was very much a surprise.
Okay.
So we're going to three.
I love it.
But it's fun. Our kids are three, and our daughter especially is very excited about having a baby sister. We know it's a girl. So all that is just like to watch my daughter be in love with the idea and want to carry a baby around and pretend to have a baby. Like, it's pretty great. It's pretty great.
Nothing is better than being a kid. I mean, there's so many moments. I know you're a Bluey family too, right? Yeah. What about that episode?
Listen, there's talk that it's over now, and I'm just not okay with that. Or that it's trending towards a finish, and that's not going to be okay. I could give you 20 minutes of takes on Bluey, because if you watch, Bluey will make you a better parent.
Oh, yeah.
It's a kid's show that makes you a better parent. And that's super valuable.
I mean, basically, like the Tom Brady of Fox.
Yes.
So he just has two kids on each arm while he's playing about three games at once and teaching a life lesson all at the same time.
And there's like a couple of different things to take away from that. I saw Dale Earnhardt Jr., of all people, said that the Bluey dad gives an unrealistic expectation of how to be a father. And I guess you could come away with that. Or the alternative is you can literally make up any game in the world and your kids are going to like it, which is basically what I've taken from it. I'll just steal games from the show and they couldn't be happier. So if it is ending, it's rough.
I mean, he's basically the opposite of the dad at Starbucks on his phone, scrolling away as he has two kids sitting there just dying and begging. Like, there's no more depressing sight than that. Like, I saw that a couple of weeks ago. I wanted to go up to the guy and just backhand him across the face. Worst than shopping cart guy.
Yeah. It can be tough. I know, like, people have to work, people have to do stuff. Like, it can be tough. So
it is. That's true. That's true. You got to separate work, as tough as it is. It's not easy.
No.
But we're here to work because we've got beer, right? I mean, we're working here. I've got a cucumber blessings. That fatty beer and hamburger. What are you working?
I'm working on a dancing gnome. Dancing gnome brewery. I've got a couple go-to breweries. You know, I come to a fatty. I look at what they've got. I've got a short list of three or four that they've got that I'm going to grab it. Dancing gnome's on that list.
They definitely have a beer for everything. Pale ales, IPAs, seasonal stouts. So let me ask you this, Jeremy. It's a good place to start. If you had a beer and it was called Wide Receiver Train, what kind of beer would it be?
What kind of beer would it be?
Yeah.
It would be, right, like what I say here, big-bodied, strong, but you could drink it fast, and it would have stickum on this so you could hold on to it really well. No, it's a good question. But, yeah, the Wide Receiver Train, I'm probably guilty of, you probably know how this is. Anybody else out there knows how this is. Do you take your work home with you? And, man, when it comes to the Wide Receiver Train, I walk around all day thinking about the Bills again, wide receiver. And it's probably not good, but I'll just be driving and thinking about Xavier Worthy. I don't know if that's the right guy. And thinking about, I don't want anybody to tell me trading up for a Dunze is not responsible. I want a Dunze. So it constantly occupies my thoughts.
It's unhealthy. I think we have to maybe get a medication.
It's either unhealthy or it's one of those things where if you do something you love, you never work a day in your life. Sure. It's somewhere in that spectrum. Unhealthy or that.
Well, you were on this early and you were 100% correct to load up. And I know we've talked about it a few times over the years. I want to say you've been probably as consistent as anybody in the market. Like, you've got Josh Allen, load up with weapons. Just try to win shootouts.
Yeah.
Like, think through that lens as much as you can while you have this quarterback. But in terms of the wide receiver train, like, is there one that you love? Is there a Jalen White receiver?
There are a couple. But yeah, like, I have been on this train or driving this train for a while. Two playoff games ago, the Bills dressed Cole Beasley off the street and John Brown. And then last year, they got a drop from Diggs. Everyone remembers that. They got drops from Trent Sherfield. Like, they're throwing balls to Trent Sherfield and street free agent Cole Beasley in playoff games. The last couple of years, I felt they weren't deep enough at receiver. Now I feel like they're almost nowhere. I mean, Shakir and Curtis Samuel are nice. It's almost like those are the depth behind the guys I really want. You know, different jobs. Who do I love? I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. Okay, can't have him. Roma Dunze. Okay, maybe can't have him. I love Leggett. I love Xavier Leggett. I was talking about this with, look at who. But if you're looking at red flags or like the knock, every player's going to have a knock, right? We spend months looking at a player like, okay, what's wrong with him? What's the problem? One of the problems with Leggett is, well, he just figured it out. Okay, that's bad. You only get 4 years in college. And if you become good in your fourth year, all right, that's good. Go draft him. I don't know how often you would say about any other business, well, he just started to have a successful business. Like, oh, he has a business. Great. That's a good thing. Sorry it took so long. So I don't worry about Leggett in that way at all. I wouldn't worry about 1 year production. And I think the Bills, think about Dawson Knox, never caught a touchdown in college. They drafted him. Devin Singletary. They didn't throw him the ball. The Bills said, you can catch balls up. Over and over again, we see them take tools guys and throw them right in, whether that's right down to Terrell Bernard or whatever. So I love the Leggett idea. I would do Leggett at 28. I probably wouldn't think you could get him to 60. But the reality is, it's kind of like when they drafted Josh Allen. I've got guys I like, but the most important thing is they get somebody. And whoever that is, even if I think it's a bad idea to get 80 Mitchell, get somebody because you've got to start swinging at us.
Great take, because I totally agree. I mean, Xavier Leggett, yeah, he didn't have production for 3 years. Jim Nagy, who runs the Senior Bowl, we were talking about. He brought him up. He said, this is a fit for the Bills. This is somebody that they – this is before the Diggs trade, but a big, physical, boundary receiver that is going to win a jump ball with Josh Allen. You know, Josh Allen's going to give him a chance.
Yep.
And he said he talked to people in the South Carolina program, and they said, like, they basically challenged him to get better behind the scenes and ramp it up, and he met the challenge. That just screams Buffalo Bills. Everything that Brandon Bean talks about, Sean McDermott, they want somebody that is going to put the onus on them personally, do something about it. He took his game to a different level.
Yep.
He looked like a completely different player.
Yeah. And I think about, you know, comparisons can be tough because as soon as you compare a guy to a guy in the league, it almost kind of sets a bar that's hard to reach. But Brett Coleman, who does a lot of film breakdown studies, videos, his comp for Leggett is A.J. Brown. Like, A.J. Brown was a second-round pick that I'm sure had a couple of things that were not perfect, but he's a big physical guy. He's explosive after the catch. So, to me, that's the other thing with the wide receiver train. I like Leggett as, oh, we'll have Diggs, Leggett, Shakir, and now, okay, Leggett, Shakir, and I got to get somebody else over here. I don't know who that might be. They might have to draft a guy in the first and the third, and that could be fine. Brandon Ayuk. We'll talk about that too if you want. There's a rumor going around town about Brandon Ayuk. Just, you know.
Where's this rumor start?
It's, you know how it goes. One of those telephone rumors. My friend told me this. My friend told me that. We'll see. But that's a good idea as any.
If you got the money to pay up for Brandon Ayuk, do it.
Yep.
It's good to have, you know, A talents at that position. Yeah, you mentioned Diggs. I would love to get your perspective. I mean, you're taking calls every month. You have the finger on the pulse of the fan base in a very anecdotal, non-Twitter way, which I appreciate. I really, truly feel like Twitter X magnifies the loudest, the angriest, minority. Kind of lit them, not too long ago.
Sure.
So you're hearing some fans. Now, what's the conversation around Stephon Diggs like before the trade and after? Because, look, I grew up in Ellicottville. I've been in this market a long time. You have as well. I've never seen, at least it seems on the outside, a fan base do a 180 like they've done with Stephon Diggs, where it's leave Diggs alone. He loves it here. He's going to be here a long time. He's one of the best receivers in the league, too. Screw him.
Addition by
He's washed up. Addition by subtraction. The flip is wild, but I don't know if I'm reading too much into that Twitter world. You're talking about this thing in the morning. What's it really like in that study? And isn't the shift been as hard as I think it is?
I think the shift has been that hard. I think an important piece of context here is Josh Allen is the king of this team, period. And like I think back to the first problem anybody had with Diggs is what happened on the sideline against Cincinnati when he's doing something. We still do not know what he said. We have no idea the tone. All we know was it was some version of
why it was described to go along. I think
right.
That's what he said.
But then, right, that, or you haven't watched Love is Blind yet? But we think it was some version of what are you doing out there? Throw me the ball. What's the matter with you? Something. And I just think it's always so interesting that NFL teams and sports teams create a narrative around their team now. That's the new media. You know that. Every team, every decision, everything is perfect. Everybody gets along. Everybody loves each other. There's never any drama in this building. We're all in the same, you know, pull in the same direction. And the people never clash. So that when you see a clash, it's jarring. Whoa, you can't call out my quarterback like that. When in reality, of course you can. It happens in the locker room. It happens in meetings. It happens in off seasons where there be clashes between friends or brothers. It was reported that by Tim Grant that last year, week one, Allen snapped at Diggs.
Right.
Wasn't on camera. Is anybody mad about that? Have you heard a word about that? I don't know what Allen said, but I would think Allen's like within his rights. Go ahead, snap at him. Go back and forth. You guys are supposed to be ultra competitors that are driving each other to greatness. Okay. Travis Kelce choke Andy Reid at the Super Bowl or whatever. Like, he hit him, you know? So I have a problem with getting hung up on that uber competitive stuff because that literally drives the sport.
Yes.
And so many people are so used to the videos of the high fives and everything's perfect. And I think we've lost a little bit of that perspective. Like, of course they freak out. Peyton Manning and Jeff Saturday screaming in each other's faces. Yes. It's an amazing video.
Dan Fouts and Keller Winslow.
Yes.
It's another great one.
Yes. Like, anybody does it. There's a Premier League game on in here, and that's very normal. If you're playing soccer in the Premier League and you make a wrong pass when a guy thought he had a shot, he's going to raise his arms and be like, what were you doing? And over there, it's just like, yeah, that happened. It's fine. Here, not just Buffalo, but here in the NFL, everybody acts like that's such a problem. And I just don't think it's a problem. So it's a long answer to your question of, yes, people did turn on him quickly because Josh Allen is the king. And as long as Allen stays, they can pretty much do anything they want. Anything in the world. They could trade, you name it, Milano. If Allen and Milano got in a dust up on the sideline and they traded Milano the next day, like, fine. You're like, I just think Allen is the king, and as long as he's here, there's going to be a belief that they'll always have a chance. And that's probably right.
That's such a great point, because I was, after the dig stuff went down, I had to look it up here on my phone. Former Bills assistant reached out to me, and he said, fans and Twitter have no idea how the real NFL works. And then the second text, no clue. That's it, right? I mean, through the season, we see clips put out maybe by the team, by fans, things photoshopped, a certain message is condensed and pushed, and it feels like everything's hunky-dory. That was the case with Diggs. Like, you would see a 14-second clip at a practice put together. I mean, this isn't even a fan. It could be somebody in TV. Diggs, like, shaking his ass, and they put him to it, and they're making fun of Stephen A. Smith for even suggesting that something could be wrong in Buffalo with Stephon Diggs. There's a real NFL that isn't on Twitter. And that real NFL, it might have included, as you said, maybe there's beef there with the quarterback, which, guess what, Josh Allen is going to win that. I've been told Stephon Diggs was done with Sean McDermott, and that's not taking sides. Like, maybe Sean McDermott is well within his right to be fed up with Stephon Diggs. Maybe there's something so bad behind the scenes, but we don't know, that's getting removed the poison from the locker room. Maybe Stephon Diggs is what Stephon Diggs has kind of always been. You know, he arrived with some baggage. You knew that when you traded for him. And maybe the Bills should have gone out of their way to somehow develop that relationship. As Herm Edwards said, he learned from Tony Dungy. Like, pick 3-4 guys from that roster as a head coach. Build that relationship. Care about that relationship. Make sure that that's good. Maybe the onus is on the Bills. So I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, I think it got to this point for a reason, and it's a shame because I don't think he's done. You know, through half of the season, he was on pace for a career year. The offense changed. They go into more of a power rushing attack and let Josh run, which is great. But Diggs kind of becomes, I think I wrote in that column, he's basically DJ Khaled. He's kind of useless, you know? And it's too bad it got to that point. But it got to that point for a reason, and it's too and, it shouldn't.
Right, and, you know, maybe he's ultra-competitive to a fault where it becomes unproductive. Okay, you know, you get a span of time where it works, and then it wears out. Like, my favorite example to use on this is the Steelers, because Steelers are an organization that's so proud, and they don't have time for Antonio Brown. They don't have time for Le'Veon Bell. We're the Steelers. We don't deal with that stuff. That could never happen here. How the Steelers been since Antonio Brown left? Just like the most middle of the road. Just, I mean, they're finishing 9-8 and making the playoffs. But I think about it in a lot of ways. Like, if you had a band that got together and made 5 platinum albums and then broke up, Ryan wasn't bad. It ran its course, and then like, okay, hey, we're going to go all do our own project. So I guess the takeaway for me is, like, Ayuk is a good example here. The idea of trading for Ayuk, somebody on Twitter wrote to me, I don't want another diva. The answer is, you definitely should want one.
Yes.
You definitely should. You should want one for like 4 years, and then if it flames out, fine. But if you think that you're just going to, you know, get a bunch of high school coach sons, perfect citizens, you might. But some divas or some mercurial characters are going to be required for genius. Like, and what Diggs does on the field is genius in a way. So, all right, he's a little bit out there. Handle it. Houston thinks they can handle it. And I'm inclined to think that they're probably right. They'll handle it. Maybe they'll win a bunch. Maybe he'll go in there and push Nico Collins to be a little better. Push Tank Dell to be better. I mean, Deion Dawkins, 1 year into the Diggs relationship with the Bills, wrote an article about how he showed all of them how good football players can be. It's Deion Dawkins. He's no slouch. And he said that everybody in that locker room understood on a different level how good you can be at football. So it broke up. It ended. That's okay. That's going to happen. It should not in any way scare you off of the idea.
I'm trying to find it here as we're talking, but like Chad Hall, to that effect, said the same exact thing in 2020, running for that AFC Championship game. Excited Stephon Diggs as the maniacal competitor who helped raise everybody's ability. Yeah, you need somebody that's got a bunch of screws in these wires are a little cross. That, by the way, made one of the most memorable plays in NFL history.
Yeah,
in the divisional round of the playoffs to get his team to the conference championship. I mean, there's a competitiveness to Stephon Diggs that is rare. If you want that. So if the direction is, for Bill's sake, you hope the direction isn't what you just said, high school football, like militaristic, everybody get in line, do the same thing. Everybody's not going to be treated the same. It's a fine line, right? Because I part of me gets the Bills. They're going younger. No Mitch Morris, no Tre'Davious White, no Jordan Poyer. You're having these younger leaders emerge, Terrell Bernard, Christian Benford. Like, maybe in their heads, it's, do we want a malignant presence setting a bad example? So if there is something we don't know, I'm open to knowing what that something is. With Diggs. But everything that we do know, you need a stud receivers to win in the NFL, and those stud receivers are going to come with something extra that you have to deal with.
And they also, people talk about that position as being the position of the diva. They're the only position, pretty much, where they can bust their ass all year long, do what it takes. And at the end of the game, they had one catch for 7 yards. It's like, wow, you didn't show up to it. It's like, actually, I did. I kicked that dude's ass across the line for the whole day, but I didn't get the ball. And you're telling me I didn't do my job? So,
and that's why they're doing this, right?
Like, it's tough. I think
I hate that word.
Right. I think they're put in a tough situation. But, like, again, getting back to the current Bills, and I think the Bills deserve credit for this because one of the things I remember is Diggs on the Von Miller podcast when talking about being here when he was happy was they let you be yourself. Like, they've got different personalities. They're not some Tom Coughlin ship. I don't think. You know, they're going to bring in different characters, different kind of guys. Like Isaiah McKenzie, you know, like he annoyed them, but they loved him. But I'm like, in a way, like they're going to let you be you because that's important to have different kind of personalities.
I mean, we were just talking about it a little bit. The aftermath of our three-parter here is really interesting. But like, that was something that very few people picked up on. I mean, Isaiah said it. Tywan Jones said it. I thought Tywan made a great point. He was with Buffalo originally, early in Sean McDermott's tenure. He was unhappy. He did not like living in Buffalo. He thought it was way too militaristic, way too. Like, you can't be yourself, you can't have certain beliefs, and speak those beliefs out loud. He leaves, he goes to Houston, He catches the pass from Deshaun Watson in the wild card game. Ends the season. Gets him a field goal range. He comes back. He said, "Xavier, guys, can move themselves." You can talk to Sean in the cafeteria. Isaiah McKenzie said the same thing. I think that's true. And Deion Dawkins has said it. And that's important, which makes this whole Diggs storyline riveting. There's a lot that we still don't know.
Yeah.
And I guess we probably should move this forward a little bit, but you do have to draft a receiver.
Yes.
And there's going to be some red flags, whether it's Leggett with 1 year of production, A.D. Mitchell with being a diabetic and not knowing which A.D. Mitchell you're going to get if he's not being disciplined with his head, his top again road. Or I tell you what, the guy I love, Jeremy, Xavier Worthy. I mean, you have lived in fear of a Tyreek Hill.
Yes.
That's a huge reason. In 13 seconds, you had your DBs lined up 30 yards off the ball. You're
terrifying.
You're thinking overtime is a good thing. That's what one coach said. Like, it's, let's just get there. You're worried that he's going to get to the house. Why not try to find your own run? I feel like that it has to be in the minds of being in McDermott. Like, this is a weapon who can bring that effect and just stress the field in ways nobody on the team would say.
Yeah. And to that point, like, it's Worthy, if it's any one of these receivers, I think that a sleeping storyline is the pressure on Joe Brady. Joe Brady came in, and the offense did not get that much better. Defense got a lot better. The most points they gave up once Brady took over, Philly, they lost. But in the games they won, the most they gave up, I think it was 22. So the defense rounds into form. All of a sudden, they start winning games. They beat the Patriots in not a blowout. They beat the Dolphins in part because of a punt return touchdown. They beat the Easton Stick Chargers by 2. I think it's been a little bit overblown how good Joe Brady did. And that's why, back to the Diggs conversation, like, oh, well, Diggs wasn't really a part of the offense in those 8 games, I think. Why have people decided to line up on the offensive coordinator that was an interim coordinator that came in and not the quarterback and wide receiver that had passed for the most completions, yards, and touchdowns in the entire NFL in the time span they've been together? I've got lots of resume here and a coordinator that seemed like he did an okay job. So, I'm saying Brady's a bum. We'll see what he does with their offense. But that's going to come quick. If early in this season, 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks in, they look like a running team that isn't explosive on offense, I think those questions are going to come for Brady quick.
That is a fresh take. And I appreciate it. You know, it's easy to forget that game in LA. I mean, they easily could have lost that.
Easton Stick.
Bailey Zappe and the Patriots, right, in your house.
Yep.
If Rasul Douglas, and give Brandon B. credit for trading for Rasul Douglas, they're going to need him this year, starting outside. Without him, I mean, do they lose to Bailey Zappe? Offensively, something was still kind of and I get it. The Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and it was a different Chiefs offense. They nickeled and dimed, and they adjusted, but you still need to be explosive. You look at this conference. You've got Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, CJ Stroud, Joe Burrow, whatever you see in Miami. I mean, they're going to put up a lot of yards and some points here in the regular season. You're going to need big plays. That's why I love Worthy. What happens if they take a cornerback or a D lineman?
Well, they didn't.
What's your show like that next morning?
It's a good question. There are some defensive linemen I would be excited to get. Like, if they were to get the UCLA defensive end, if he somehow fell at 28, he won't. His medical is why, like, people thought he would fall, and then he goes to the teams. But they're to nab him or even Chop Robinson. Friday morning sounds like, okay, everybody, wait. Just wait till tonight.
Right.
As long as they get it right tonight, we'll be okay. If they don't get it right tonight, we're in trouble. If it's Curtis Samuel, can't be your number one receiver on the outside. You can't roll Curtis Samuel and Mac Hollins and Khalil Shakir and think you're going to be okay.
Green Bay's a good example there. I mean, they needed a receiver badly in Rodgers' last season. They took, I believe, Quay Walker and Devontae Wyatt on defense first round instead of maybe trying to trade up and get a receiver. Packer fans listening, you remember this well. Like, losing their minds, and then what happens? They get Christian Watson, they get Romeo Doubs, and the next year they get Wicks,
Jaden Reed.
They've just been drafting receivers, and these aren't first round picks. So, you know, they can go defense, but then take two or three receivers.
And that's a key difference between the Bills and the Chiefs. People like to point out, well, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and who are their receivers? That's not, to me, that's like the wrong takeaway. The Chiefs have been drafting them. So the team that won the Super Bowl without them is still showing you they think they're really important. Sky Moore, Rasheed Rice, they trade for Kadarius Toney. They signed Juju Smith-Schuster. They signed MVS to 3 for 33. That's a team that has tried to find their next receiver, and they probably will this year again. So if you take away on watching the Chiefs from the Super Bowls, oh, why do I need a receiver? You got to look at the Chiefs and say, they think they need one, and they're winning without it. So what happens when they actually get a guy? What happens when they get Pat Dimension or Xavier Worthy? And all of a sudden it's, you know, Patrick Mahomes with, I don't know that Xavier Worthy's next Tyreek Hill, but the point about the speed there is, oh, the fastest receiver in the league now plays for Patrick Mahomes. Again? Uh-oh. They're going for it again. Their takeaway wasn't, we don't need a receiver.
It's and Tyreek Hill's name wasn't broke. I gotta find the exact quote from a scout, but he does have that ability. Let's see. And so in Bob's series, he was ranked ahead of Brian Thomas at number 4.
Worthy.
This is a scout to Bob McGinn. Immediately, you have so much hidden production because every single defensive coordinator in the NFL is scared of one thing, a guy getting behind the defense. If Worthy's on the field, you're backing the fuck up because it's a Tyreek Hill fest opening up the middle of the field all day long. He's a true Z that can run by anybody in the NFL. I put him behind Waddle coming out, but ahead of Marquise Brown. And that's the other thing. Like, he's going to help McCain. He's going to help Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel. He's underneath ton of weapons. I mean, that's a hidden production. Like, you're terrified of this guy going deep. Like, the Bills were at Arrowhead in 13 seconds.
And think about the evolution of the NFL. It's always evolving. If you had Xavier Worthy 8 years ago, you might think a certain thing about him. Now that every team in the league runs that cheat motion that the Dolphins just invented, they go, we'll just run cheat motion with Xavier Worthy. Oh, okay. He's getting three releases against these corners. You watch Tyreek Hill, the guys are like, oh, so I got him because he gets that free release. So, I mean, what if Miami gets Xavier Worthy? Of course they'll try, right? Like, they have an identity. They know what they want. They want to be attracting an offense, and you know, they haven't beaten anybody any good yet. I think they ultimately will in time. I think their coach is brilliant. I think they're set there for a long time. And like, I would be worried about Miami in the arms race. Who starts ahead of you?
It's an easy team to dismiss because they've owned them. Right. But they're still there.
But how many years in a row of Tua passing for more yards than Josh Allen would it take for a Bills fan to be like, well, that doesn't feel like it should happen? Tua won the passing title.
And that's a team that runs through its offensive-minded coach. Let's just put it out there. Whoever drafts Xavier Worthy is going to win the AFC. It's in there. It's on the record.
What's your take?
It's take right
now. My take is this. Just get weird and get Roma Dunze. Let's go. Don't mess around. Go get Roma Dunze. You can't get high enough for Marvin Harrison. Get Roma Dunze.
Don't do the picks.
Don't mess around. Why do you need a first round pick?
A first round. Why not?
Bean said two things that I think lend that to being possible. Here's the trail breadcrumbs and how the Bills are going to get a Dunze. One, the Bears are at 9. They only have 4 picks in the entire draft. 2, Bean said he would not rule out trading a future first. Doesn't love it, but if it's right, we'll do it. 3, talked about future picks and said, if I'm dealing with a perennial playoff team, then I'm going to bump that down around. You're a perennial playoff team, you know? So What are you worried about trading the 27th overall pick? And on top of that, next year, just say when you don't have a first, yeah, we only have like 14 first rounders this year anyway. Teams love saying that. Just say we only had 14 first round grades, so we're kind of happy we don't have a first round pick. Just say it. Nobody checks you. We're on audits. Just do it.
Oh, man.
I'd be so good at this.
It's so funny you say that because when I did that Giants thing a few years ago, talking to a lot of those scouts that have left, there was one former Giants scout that said, yeah, I think it was Chris Pettit who was still there. He said, I wouldn't be surprised if he changed his grade out of player. You know, I would love to do an audit. Everybody else is getting nodded in the world. Like, yeah. Let's do an audit on some of these teams and how they view these prospects. Yeah. You know, and I think Jim Marty's over there, my podcast co-host, you know, he would say the same thing. Like, it wasn't necessarily trading a first-round pick for Sammy Watkins that doomed them. It was, by doing that, you're doubling down on AJ Manning.
Right.
You've got Josh Allen.
Yeah, double down on Josh Allen.
Double down on Josh Allen. Do it. Because that next year, 2015, you didn't really miss out on anything in that draft. Go back and look at it. You got Darby in the second round. He's been better than most of these guys in the first round. So,
and I think there's a key, like, people like to say the draft's a crapshoot. It's not a crapshoot. There's randomness in it. Some of it's random. But if you were to offer up, would you trade the Bills' first-round pick for every pick in the sixth round? I wouldn't. Do you need 32 sixth-round picks? How many players make your roster? Five? So there's diminishing returns there. Everyone loves to say, don't trade up, don't trade up. It's not smart, it's not smart. But those are people that are only looking at the draft from what did you pull from it. And the Rams are a great example of this. Rams haven't had a first-round pick since Jared Goff. They have a Super Bowl, another Super Bowl appearance, and multiple NFC Championship games. Like, you don't need that first-round pick for the Bills. I'm ready to have it happen. I'm ready to have some people tell me it's not smart. And I'm ready for the Bills to hang a banner and go up there snarkly and say, but too bad we don't have the first round pick. Like,
yes.
Who cares?
Yes, who cares?
I know it's not smart. I know it's not smart. I just don't care.
It's a different day. Are you into sports cards by chance?
I used to be.
So me and my brother have gotten back into it. We mentioned my wife's Uncle Lou on the last podcast with Joey Molinaro. He's really into it. But it reminds me of, like, how you hunt for sports cards today. Like, everybody wants Victor Wembanyama. Hey, Brandon Miller. So I would take one Wemby Silver Prism over 30 leaky black, you know,
right.
Prisms. Like, these cards you get $1 for on eBay. Give me the Wemby.
Right.
Try to go for it a little bit.
Right, like, should the Vikings trade Justin Jefferson for 37 Carolina Panthers?
Yeah.
No. Just keep the best player. You know, you'll find other guys. You'll be fine. So always aim for the best player. That kind of gets back to the Diggs thing. Like, one thing I'm consistent about, whoever they are, I'll defend the great players no matter what. All the time. You know? I don't want to be sold on some guy that, like, good because you like him because he's nice. Like, this is pro sports. We'll get the best dudes, win it, hang a banner. There's something we've never done around here. They don't hang banners for draft values, added EPA. No one gets banners for that. You get a dumb Zanny plays for you and you retire his number. Like the Julio Jones trade. Win. Who'd they trade with? What did they get? Does anybody remember? Nobody cares.
By the way, he checks every box personality-wise, too.
He should have had a Super Bowl. Still mad about it.
I mean, a Dunsett. Like, I mean, he checked, yeah.
The Dunsett. The Bills are going to love him. Raised on a farm. Boom. Lock it in. Here's a question. Would any Bills prospect be willing to lie and say they wrestle?
Oh, man.
It might be. I mean.
Yeah, you can't do what Joe Mixon did and not recognize Sean McDermott.
I remember you telling me that.
You can't do that. Yes, you got to know who your head coach is if you want to get drafted. Yeah. But, yes, that would be the other end of the spectrum. Just say you wrestled.
Oh, yeah. Love wrestling.
Maybe if it wasn't on record at your high school, maybe you wrestled with your dad in the basement.
Sure.
Right?
Are there McDermott YouTube videos from when he wrestled? Like, I went back and I watched some of your stuff. I got to say that one match, they'd be like, on the board. Put him up there. We love this kid. He did his research. Right?
Beautiful. Jeremy, this was a delight.
Thank you
so much, man.
Thanks for the invite.
I think I said, you know, let's just talk 15 minutes as we rotate through. I want to talk to you for another one.
Anytime.
All right.
I'm around.
That's not an operator. Everybody,
my kids are here.
They're here?
They're here. They walked in. My kids are here.
I didn't even know.
I don't know what my wife took them, but they're here. They must have gone in the back.
All right. Well, we should go mid it.
Yes.
All right. Let's get back to the extravaganza.
All right.
All righty, here is our next conversation. Jay Skursky with the Buffalo News. More Bills talk, more wide receiver talk. Thank you so much, everyone.
Jay Skursky, Buffalo News. Great to see you, Jay.
Mike, how you doing?
I didn't actually think you hit record here. Oh, there it is.
Get my goal long, buddy.
Beautiful. I just wanted to bullshit with you for hours on end. I'm surprised we actually got around to this podcast, you know, drinking beers, catching up on life, football, but it's great to see you. What a good time here. Matt Fairburn, Chris Baker, Pat Moran.
Veritable who's who.
What a crew. What
Jim
a crew.
Was here as well.
Mr. Monas in the house. Refused the pot.
He did. Yeah, he shot us right down.
He said, you know what? Screw you guys. I'm getting the hell out of
here.
I'm out.
That's all right.
So we'll just bash Jim here for an hour or so and
that's right.
We'll go that route. But no, Jay does amazing work at the Buffalo News. Gosh, not just the stories you write, but at the press conferences, asking the questions that must be asked. I think that is a skill that you have, Jay. So great to have you, man.
We had a fun press conference just the other day, right? First time we've heard from Stephon, or since the Stephon Diggs trade, Josh Allen, Sean McDermott. I think there was a lot to be sort of diced out there about just how that whole thing went down, the reaction amongst, you know, the most impactful player on the team, the head coach of the team. But yeah, I appreciate that. And that trade, I think, has really been, you know, it was one of the most meaningful moves of the offseason, not just for the Bills, but probably NFL-wide. You know, especially the timing of it was pretty surprising and all of that. So I think there was a lot to sort of parse out in terms of what exactly happened, you know?
So Jeremy White, we didn't mention him. He's here as well. We talked about the Diggs trade and where the Bills go from here as well. But what was your takeaway from that press conference? Like, how do you think Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, Josh Allen kind of handled all of that? And did you come away with an understanding of what the hell went down? Or did you come away with, wow, that was a word salad upon a word salad of dancing around the issue, or is it somewhere in between?
I think it's somewhere in between. The takeaway, not necessarily from the press conferences, but just in general, is they wanted out of the Stephon Diggs business. There's no other way that you can look at this trade. One of the things that, and I tweeted this, but one of the things that Sean McDermott said that really stood out to me was, we did what was best for the Buffalo Bills in the near term and the long term. Well, okay, if you define the near term as the upcoming season, which is what I would do, what did the Bills get back for that trade? A 2025 second round pick that isn't going to help them on the field for 18 months, right? And they lost cap space. So if it's helping you in the near term, it's because it's addition by subtraction, because you needed that guy out of your locker room. That's the only conclusion that you can draw from it helping you in the long term, because Brandon Bean said after the trade was made, yeah, we're probably not a better team right now. Well, if Sean McDermott believes that they could be a better team, it's because Stephon, they had reached their limit with Stephon Diggs. And so that's what I take away from it. I mean, you mentioned Allen McDermott and Bean. Those are the three most impactful people in the organization by far. None of them have cried about this publicly. They've all said, okay, yeah, well, it happens. We're moving on, right? They've all been like, they've all recognized, like, yes, he's very talented, but we're looking forward.
Yeah.
And like, if they're so willing to do that, it tells you that, like, I don't know if I would say that this is a long time coming, but there is a reason that Josh Allen was not up there, like, looking downcast. He was not looking at the ground. There was no anger. There was no resignation. He was a really good player, and I'm really excited about what we have. To me, it screams of, We had to move on from this guy. We absolutely had to, for whatever reason, you know, whether it's peace in the locker room, whatever it may be. But they're not better in the near term unless you believe that he was so hard to deal with that not having him around is better.
Man, with Jeremy, I mean, that's what we were kind of discussing is, like, this is an A-level talent. So, I mean, even that first half of the season, he was en route to a career year. The offense changed. You can make the argument either way. Like, they won without him. You don't need him. Make the argument. Look at this AFC. Look at the firepower. Look at the quarterbacks. Look at the offenses. If you've got a receiver like this, you need that receiver to put up points. Same time, I think you kind of hinted at it. Like, there's something we don't know, right? Like, it must have been so bad behind the scenes. Like, what could that possibly be?
There is a disconnect there, and it has existed since the Bengals playoff loss, right? You know, you see the demonstrative digs on the sideline, screaming at Allen, and I don't think that things ever got better. He's missing the first day of mandatory minicamp. His head coach is saying that he's very concerned that he's missed the first day of mandatory minicamp. There's never been any satisfactory explanation about why he wasn't there, about what that disconnect was. And so I don't know that it ever improved. I don't know that it ever got better. There was this lingering sense of, is he or is he not happy? And my question to Sean McDermott was, did that start to weigh on the organization? Were you just not able to deal anymore with the idea that you've got this dynamic player? It's dynamic on the field. There's no question. But why do you have to keep answering questions? Why does he have to? Why does Josh Allen have to? Why does Sean McDermott have to keep answering questions about, is he happy? Does he want the ball more? Does he want more money? Does he want this? Does he want that? It, for whatever reason, and a lot of it had to do with Diggs, you know, cryptic tweets and all of this.
And was that the final straw? I mean, was that anything? The you sure? The shot of Josh Allen the day before it happened?
Yeah, I think it could have been, because if you want to believe that Brandon Bean, that the deal went down pretty quickly, I think they maybe looked at that and said, enough is enough. We just don't want to deal with it. But it's nuanced, right? There are a lot of different reasons. It doesn't have to be one thing.
Diggs wanted out. He wanted out.
So Diggs wants out. The Bills look at it and say, you're 30 years old. You're turning 31. Over the last 8-10 games of the year, Khalil Shakir was a better wide receiver. He produced more. Khalil Shakir makes 1/27th of what you make on the salary cap. We are looking at this not just in 2024 cap dollars, but in 2025, right? He's free and clear. You can't tell me that a team is going to eat the largest dead money cap hit of any player in NFL history that isn't a quarterback unless he is a massive migraine headache. And they just want it out of the Stephon Diggs business. That's the best way that I can say it. Every clue has to lead you to that conclusion.
I do think, too, like, because the Bills could have said, they could have called his bluff. You know, I'm sure Stephon Diggs made it clear to the Bills, he's done, he's out, move me. The Bills could have called his bluff if they really wanted to, and play hardball, get to the regular season, get and dare Stephon to miss out on millions of dollars.
Sit out?
But could he have been a malcontent, right? You let a lot of veterans go, you have a younger team, you want new leaders to emerge. I get that argument too, but okay, enough digs.
Well, he was team captain, and you wonder, yeah. I wonder his influence on his other teammates, his younger teammates. Do they want him around that situation? I have good reason to believe that they probably do not want him around that, right? And what's rubbing off on some of his teammates? I think that's a legitimate question.
Another legitimate question, though, is can you win offensively the way that they won late last season? Like, can you win running the ball? Can you win spreading out to multiple weapons? This is such a huge draft. I mean, if Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott go in and draft 2-3 wide receivers, maybe they trade up for Adonze. Who knows what they do? I mean, this is really important. But I think the style of offense that this team plays is so crucial. Because I don't think that you're going to be able It's extreme to say that they grounded and pounded. We covered those Rex Ryan teams.
Yeah.
It's not that.
No, no.
But you've got Joshua. You've got the strongest arm in the NFL. You need to let him run 10 times a game, and you need to let him throw it all over the field and win that backyard style of football. You know, you could see that Diggs was getting frustrated toward the end of the season. And I remember writing at the time, like, this is such a juncture for the Bills. Like, you're going to have to spread it out. You're going to have to be more explosive to win playoff games. Saying that even as the Chiefs won the way they won, they've got Patrick Mahomes. So it's a different story. I don't. I feel like you've got to find explosive playmakers in this draft. Do you think that they see it that way, or do you think that they see it as, no, we can kind of win running the ball as much as we did?
That's a good question. I think that they see. I think it's a mix of those two, right? I think that they want to be able to run it when they need to. I think they showed that last year against Dallas, right? They can do it. Like, Cook is a really good running back. I think they like their line play. You know, you said Patrick Mahomes, and it's different. And my question is, how different is it? I mean, Allen is, he's up there, right? He's not Mahomes, but he's ultra talented. I mean, the guy, we talked before we started recording here, about how good he was in that Philadelphia game, the game that they lost, right? I mean, the guy was just stupid good. I mean, he's so, so good. And so do I think that they could – but I wonder if they look at Kansas City and they said, we traded Tyreek Hill and have won both Super Bowls since we did that. And now they have Travis Kelce.
And they rebuilt their whole defense in a way Buffalo has not, right? Like, they drafted really well.
Yeah, they've drafted well, and they've gotten younger, and – they've had rookie contributors. Sean McDermott hasn't played a lot of rookies. I think that's going to have to change. I think he's going to get a younger here on defense. But it's not about defense for me. It's about outscoring the opposition. You had 27-24. You lose to the Chiefs, and you're in position, right? And if Allen makes the right read and throws it to Diggs and they get the first down in that game, maybe they win that game. Or maybe they pull ahead, and who knows what happens. They've played the Chiefs as close as any team in the league, better than any team in the league over the last 2 or 3 years. They've beaten them in Arrowhead Stadium. They're right there. They can make the case that they're right there. I don't think that getting younger has to make them worse necessarily. I don't think that losing Stephon Diggs means that they have to be less dynamic and less explosive on offense, because I believe in Josh Allen that much. Your question was, do they have to get that explosive player in the draft? I mean, certainly wide receiver is a need. There's no question. But I do think, and you can offer some insight here. I mean, you follow the Packers so closely, right? There's that idea of, do they trade up for a Dunes? That's the big swing, right? Do they maybe take the reverse and say, we're going to go second round and fifth round at wide receiver, right? Because that's kind of what Green Bay did, right? And I think the fifth rounder ended up being better than the second. And so there's different avenues. I look at Joe Brady's history with Carolina. The year that he was there, the full year that he was there, they had 4 1,000-yard players. None of them you would consider stars in the NFL. Curtis Samuel is one of them, who's now here in Buffalo. One of the things that, again, we talked about before we started taping that I thought was such a good point was when a team, in Stephon Diggs' case, learns that it can win without you, that should be a red flag for a player. It's not that the Bills won without Stephon Diggs, but they won without him being the first 6 or 7 games of the season Stephon Diggs, the 1,700-yard wide receiver Stephon Diggs. He was a good player, but he wasn't a player that commands $27 million against the salary cap. So, again, like I said before, it's nuanced. Do I think that they want to spread the ball around more? Yeah, I do. I think they drafted Dalton Kincaid. They believe in Khalil Shakir. They think Curtis Samuel is going to have a role. We know James Cook can play. And if they get a receiver in the first or second round, they're going to want him to touch the ball. So I think when you look at all of those factors, combined with Diggs' age, combined with his moodiness, for lack of a better word, I think all of those things factor into why they decide to make this move when they did.
The Green Bay scenario would be ideal, right? You've got a bunch of first and second year receivers all over the field growing with your quarterback. I'm thinking of quarterbacks on Josh Allen's level, though, like Joe Burrow, has Ja'Marr Chase, and I mean, Patrick Mahomes, I mean, Kelce is a dinosaur compared to what he once was, but he still went to Kelce in some pretty big spots in the playoffs. Like, there's a trust level there with a veteran.
But while you say that, where was the trust level with Diggs? Why didn't Diggs make the play down the field, right? Why is Marquez Valdes-Scantling making big catch after big catch in that game for Kansas City and Stephon Diggs isn't? At some point, we've got to put some of this on Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs is a great, great player. He's going to go down in history as a top three receiver, in my mind, in Bills history. You've got Eric Moultz and Andre Reed, vice versa, as 1-2, right? They had the longevity. Diggs' numbers are such that, in talent-wise, he's up there. But you can't ignore the guy's numbers in the playoffs. He disappeared in the playoffs. Oh, yeah. He just did. And that ball in the fourth quarter is through his arms. And that ball on the other side is getting caught by Marquez Valdes-Scantling. And that's a problem.
I mean,
that is a Stephon Diggs problem.
One of the best throws we've seen out of Josh Allen in his career.
He made one to Gabe Davis in the loss to the Jets. That was 75 yards on a rope. And so it's like
the loss of the Bengals in the playoffs, right? To Gabe Davis, I think at the left sideline. I mean, there's
a lot. I mean, there's a lot of examples of Stephon Diggs kind of coming up small in those moments.
Yeah, I did a little mini series on like the Bills and how they can kind of smash the window wide open to go for the Super Bowl a few days before the Stephon Diggs trade. But Bill Polian said with his Colts teams, you know, similar to the Bills, knocking on the door, falling short, only getting to a point. You know, as the GM of the team, him and then Tony Dungy, they look at the roster, what players are helping us win in the playoffs? Who falls short in the playoffs? All right, Mike Vanderjack, the most accurate kicker in NFL history. See ya. We're bringing in Adam Vinatieri. Defensively, taking some chances on playmakers, drafting a wide receiver Illinois to play corner in the second round. I think you have to, I don't know if that factored in. I don't know where it ranked on Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott's priority list, but the fact that Stephon Diggs comes up short in the playoffs, that definitely helps you feel good about this decision.
I think it at least factors into it, right?
Factors in.
Yeah.
Who do you like in the draft then? Is there a guy, a receiver?
That's a great question. Well? Yeah, I think a lot of them, it's fun. It's a fun year to cover the draft, right? Because when you have like such a like people are so fixated on wide receiver, right? Everybody's fixated on it. And so you're looking at all of these guys and like, you've got that top three and everybody thinks like, okay, those guys are gone in the top 10. They probably are. And so then it becomes like, well, which one, what are you looking for? Are you looking for that 4-2-1 record breaking combine Xavier Worthy speed? Are you looking for the Keon Coleman contested catches? Is Brian Thomas, how long is he going to last? Do you have to move up for him? A.D. Mitchell, like everything, like the numbers check out, the production checks out, but you know why, like there seems like maybe there's something missing there. So it's a really fascinating draft. I think we're going to learn a lot about not just Brandon Bean, but really like Joe Brady too, in terms of like what type of receiver do you feel like this offense needs? Because I feel really comfortable saying that they can stay at 28 and get a guy that's going to fill like what it is that they're looking for. Maybe Worthy's gone, right? And Worthy's kind of like a flower, right? Where he's different. Like that type of speed is different, but if you want, like, if you want the contested catch, if you want the 4.3 40 vertical threat, they're all there. And so it's kind of fascinating to think about, like, and I think we go back to that. Do you need a true number one receiver to win? And the thing for me, too, is that, like, I know we've seen rookie receivers come in and succeed, but how much are we putting on a rookie receiver in terms of being like a, if we consider the Bills Super Bowl contenders, that's a lot to ask of any rookie receiver, even if it's a number one, like a first round pick. Like, are you really expecting them to come in and command 100 plus targets? Diggs was up at 150 around there. Like, let's say that you drop that down to 130. Are you giving a rookie 130 targets in this offense? A lot to learn.
I think it comes back to Joe Brady too. Jeremy yeah. made this point. Like, there is going to be a lot of pressure on Joe Brady. What is his offense? What does it look like?
Yeah.
The defense actually played better toward the end of last season. We don't really know what a Joe Brady offense in full is because we know Brian Daboll and then Ken Dorsey adopting Brian Dable's offense with some tweaks. It was complicated. Like, I'm sure you talk to these players too. Like, they come through this thing and they're like, wow, that is the most complex offense I had to learn in terms of terminology.
Well, think about where it came from, right?
New England.
Yep. Right? And how long had Tom Brady been there, right? And so how well did he know that offense, right? And so that follows Daboll, right? And now you're looking at it and it's like, all right, well, Josh has been here 7 years. He knows it inside and out. But for to your point, a young player comes in. How much is he able to pick? Like, Khalil Shakir didn't really do a lot as a rookie, 10 catches, right? Now, he took a huge step forward. Really, one of the guys that really surprised me. But I think that's why you have to be a little bit cautious in terms of, like, projecting any rookie.
Unless it's simplified. Do you think he could simplify this offense into something else?
Well, yes, I do. And it's such a good point about Brady because when did he take over? Game 11 last year. How much is he changing?
Yeah, he's not going to change that much.
It's very, very little, right? And so now he's got this entire offseason to reinvent, or even if that's too strong of a word, to leave his mark or put his stamp on this offense. And yeah, it could look a lot. I mean, listen, their game plans changed, right? Their game plans changed dramatically. Everyone points to that Dallas game. You know, and I love that. I love that he stuck with what was working. We're running the ball. Why change it, right? And so I can appreciate that. And I'm really curious, interested to see what his offense looks like. And, you know, it kind of goes back to what we said. So what type of receiver does he feel like he needs for this offense? We're going to learn a lot about that Thursday or Friday.
It reminded me of like the old Ellicottville football days where it's high school football, that Dallas game. Like you're running the ball. You know they can't stop you. So you're just going to keep running the ball. I mean, it really was pathetic if you're the Dallas Cowboys, right? I mean, what a sad existence.
Well, listen, we've seen the Bills on the other side of those games. Bill Belichick has done that multiple times to the Bills, right?
But my point would be like, that's great, but I think the NFL is different in 2024. Like, if you were, like, put your brain in the place of, okay, you're getting 4 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards, 4 yards at will, but it's through the air. Think of it as you're dinking and dunking passing. It would be kind of sad to watch, right? It'd be kind of like a water gun fight.
Yeah.
Like you still need explosives. Like you need to get big yardage in big chunks. And,
yep.
And you know, you don't want to be nickel and diamond 10, 11, 12, 13 plays every drive. That's why I love Worthy. I mean, Worthy is that player that could bust this thing open for you.
Yeah. But, I mean, don't you think that that's the way that defenses are going, though? Is that they're making you do that.
So you need a player that can just put a
no matter what,
you know, put a needle in that, blow it.
You know, it's funny, like Worthy runs this 4-2-1 at the combine and everybody's excited, and I get it, but I'm looking at him and I'm thinking he's smaller than Roscoe Parrish. But as we've gotten closer to the draft, I'm kind of coming around to the idea, because like what you said, like that speed is just game changing. And they don't
can't touch these receivers, right?
Yeah, and they have not had that. Diggs wasn't that guy. Gabe Davis isn't that guy. You know, go down the list. They just don't have that. They haven't. And it's kind of fun to think of. It's kind of fun to think about how do you use them. Now the other part of that I maybe hesitate or just kind of like step back a little bit is like, well, how's that different than they plan on using Curtis Samuel? Because I think Curtis Samuel, I anticipate them using him in a way that's not the traditional wide receiver, X receiver, flanker, or whatever. I think that, you know, he's going to get carries. He's going to do things like that. But listen, that's why Joe Brady makes millions of dollars. Figure it out, right? So give him a weapon. Give him something that a team has to worry about. Any team that drafts a Xavier Worthy, the opposing defensive coordinator is going to have to worry about. So it's an intriguing idea. I mean, don't you think if he gets by 28, that Kansas City's taking him at 32, right?
Exactly.
Isn't Andy Reid looking at it and going, give me Xavier Worthy? That might be reason alone to draft
him. I mean, the Chiefs, they leaped over Buffalo to take Trent McDuffie.
Yeah.
And the Bills were left with Kyrie on.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You're going to want to be aggressive, I think.
Yeah. Gosh, could you imagine
can you
trading
really
up for it?
Sit
yeah.
You can really sit there and hope he falls to you?
You're, I mean,
if that's who you want.
If Joe Brady looks at that and says, boy, I can make that guy work in my offense. Well, we know Bean is traded up. He's done it almost every year in the first round. So he's willing to do it. And that'd be fun. It will be fun to watch Xavier Worthy wherever he lands. I think it's going to take a creative offensive mind, though, to make a guy that's 169 pounds work in your offense.
So just trade two or three first-round picks to go get Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers or
Roma Dunze. Yeah, right? Well, so my most recent mock draft for the Buffalo News, I had them moving up to number 9 with the Bears. The Bears are interesting. They have 4 picks in this draft. That's crazy. Now, 3 of them are in the top 75, including 2 of the first 9. So they've got like premium picks, but not a lot of draft capital. They're a rebuilding team. The numbers like work out really well. So the Bills, when the Chiefs came up from Mahomes, the Bills went from 10 down to 27. We're talking about 9 to 28 right now. So almost an apples to apples comparison. The Chiefs gave up their number one, obviously, the number one the next year, and a third. The Bills don't have a third this year. I proposed the 1, so 28, a 4, a 6, and the first next year. Now, it might cost a little bit more, maybe another pick next year. But, you know, the numbers, the Johnson chart, whatever, they all are pretty close. And it makes you wonder, you know, like, and this is another point that I raised. Like, so you own this 2025 second now for Minnesota. You're betting Minnesota stinks, right, with their quarterback situation. That's you're looking at, let's say that pick is 38, maybe 40. You're the Bills, and you're saying we want to be picking 32, but maybe we're picking somewhere between 26 and 32. So you're looking at moving down 12 spots, right? I think the first rounder next year is on the table for a move up. And so we know Bean's aggressive. Do they go get a Dunze? Does everything that they've said publicly, meaning on Thursday when they talked about, well, you know, we think you can spread it out and maybe you don't need a number one receiver to win. Is that all nonsense?
Right. They're not going to
say I almost said a different word there, but, you know, yeah. Like, is that just draft smoke? And can you get into the top 10 for, I mean, a Dunze is an awesome prospect. So,
you know, they love him off the field, too.
Yeah.
The team's in length.
At eight.
You think that they're at, yeah.
They're 30.
A pick before.
30, yep.
So, I mean, you would assume Raheem Morris is going to want
edge rush.
Somebody on defense.
Edge rush.
He might have Dallas Turner, whoever.
Sure.
His pick of anybody on defense at that pick.
I don't know. They're gonna get a defensive guy. They're talking about this draft as potentially having the most offensive players in round one in league history.
Oh yeah.
So if you're in Atlanta and you want defense, you can go to 28 and say we're gonna get an impact defender there.
I'm just saying though, like Atlanta, that pick, that's what Buffalo doesn't know. Like if they're gonna do the right thing and draft a Dunze, this is a league that doesn't care about defense. Hip drop tackle, all that nonsense. Like, just try to go out there and throw the ball all over the place. I don't know if they'll get to that place. I think they should. But if they can take him right there, then your plans are thwarted. But for all we know, Brandon Bean and Ryan Poles have a trade all set, right?
Could that
was the case with the Mahomes deal you referenced. Like, they had that deal set with John Dorsey and the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Like, if the player that they want, whether it's Watson or Mahomes, is still on the board, they're going to do the trade.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a Dunze for the Bills. Maybe they wait to that pick.
Yeah.
And if he's still on the board, they've got the trade ready to go, and they go.
Yeah.
But the Falcons are kind of a wild card.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? We still don't really know. Maybe that's what the Bills are sitting at.
It certainly could be. And, I mean, listen, the Bears might have a Dunze. And he'd be a lot of fun, right? DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, a Dunze, Caleb Williams. Like, wow, that's a great top three to
Matt,
be thrown.
DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, that's what makes the draft so fun. You know, a lot of us were here earlier talking about, like, I really enjoy covering the draft.
Yeah.
I can't pretend to know all these prospects. One thing I've learned, like, covering the draft is that, like, your immediate reaction to any pick should be, okay, and that's it. Because, like, who
Nobody
knows? Nobody knows about any of these guys. We talked about the Allen Rosen thing and how most Bills fans wanted Rosen, and you just never know with these guys. And, like, it's their livelihood. Jim could talk to this better than anyone, right? Yeah. It's their livelihood. It's what they do for a living. But it is fun because you study them, you think about how they would fit, who you want, you develop like these, like, oh yeah, that guy, he's really good and he makes a lot of sense. And I think everyone's guilty of it. Guilty isn't the right word, but it's like everybody does it. And it's what makes the draft like such a fun event to cover, you know, and it goes even beyond like the first round. Like you get down to the third or fourth round, it's like, wow, that guy's still there. What's going on? You know?
Yeah.
And so it's a fascinating draft. I feel like when you're a team like the Bills and you're close, every draft is so critical. Right. And I think a lot of what we've said about this year's draft and how crucial it is for Brandon Mean, we've said it in the past. We said it last year, like, and you know, I think he did a darn good job in the draft last year, you know? But he's had, and I've been very, very critical of Brandon Mean's day two picks in particular. Second round, third round, he's struggled mightily. Torrance last year maybe changes that a little bit, right? Kincaid in the first round, you give Allen a weapon. And so it's sort of fascinating to sort of see like how they view this, what is the option if it isn't receiver? Because so much attention has been spent on receiver. Could they take another position? Like, Bean's going to come out from behind that, you know, little door or wall at One Bills Drive and know, like, all right, I'm going to face the music here. If he takes somebody that isn't a receiver in the first round, how does he justify that? You know, like, a lot of questions, and that's, I think that makes it, like, part of the fun.
We'll be there. It'll be fun.
I know.
Jay, this was great. Thanks so much, buddy.
Awesome,
great to see you. Yeah. Great insight, the Buffalo News. Jay Skursky, make sure you follow him. What is your handle on
just my
the
name.
X Machine?
Jay Skursky.
But
simple.
More importantly, go to Buffalo News and subscribe.
Please,
if you want to read.
Please,
because
and,
that's
and
where you get
along.
The substance.
Yeah, exactly. You know, help us out here a little bit, right?
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.